Hello and welcome to The Sound Off, a podcast where school safety takes center stage. My name is Michelle Gay, and I'm the co-founder and executive director of Safe and Sound Schools. We're committed to protecting every school and every student every day. Today, we're unpacking a toolkit for teen resilience and empowerment in the digital age. Before we dive into our discussion, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors for their support. This season of The Sound Off is brought to you by the Door Security and Safety Foundation, which advances the critical role of certified professionals in creating safe and secure building openings. For more information and to locate an expert, visit www.doorsecuritysafety.org. Joining me is Jonathan Crystal, a lawyer, author, and father of three with insights into the undercurrents of teen behavior in our digital-first world. Jonathan's book, What They Don't Teach Teens, provides a roadmap for navigating the legal and social mazes of modern life. We'll dive into the specifics, how to talk with the police, the nuances of consent, and managing an online image. Listen in as we give you the inside track on preparing our youth to manage their rights, their choices, and their futures in today's connected reality. Joining us now, we have Jonathan Crystal. Thank you so much for joining us on The Sound Off.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm happy to be here.
It's awesome to have you on here. We have the benefit of spending a good deal of time with you on the road and at various virtual events that we host with Safe and Sound. So it's just wonderful to be able to bring you and the work that you do to the broader community of our listeners here. Just really excited about this conversation.
Thank you. I am too.
We always start off with a light note. We're going to talk about some serious stuff. You do serious work, as our listeners know. They just heard me talk a little bit about your background and some of the really intense work that you do to keep kids and communities safe. You're a lawyer, you're a prosecutor, but there's many sides to us all. So shed a little light. Let us know something very human about you. Let us know something that would surprise us, a little skill, hidden talent. What's your superpower?
You know, when you prepped me with that question, I struggled a bit. So I'm going to give you two very briefly. I've been an amateur magician for 40 years. I'm 52, actually longer than 40 years, since I was probably 5 or 6 years old. I've been doing magic. And here in Los Angeles, there's a place called the Magic Castle. It's a very well-known clubhouse for magicians. So I've been a member there for 30 years. So that's one thing most people wouldn't know. And then looking back, I'm sure we'll talk about, I was a troubled teen, turned my life around. And I just kind of reflect on all the challenges I've had. So I have a pretty good ability to grind through struggles, to put my head down and not worry about how am I going to get through it, over the next year, writing my book, 5 years of just very, very difficult time periods of just having to grind. And so I'm pretty good at grinding. And turning to our topic a bit, I think that's obviously something we want our students and our schools to be safe. And sometimes going through a hard time just means talking to somebody, but also being able to just grind and put one foot in front of the other and take it day by day. And I've had struggles and I've been able to kind of practice that. And it's been very helpful for me.
And the book is called What They Don't Teach Teens. When we talk about the book, that's what we're talking about. There it is. I have my copies. I personally found it very helpful for my girls who are they're now young adults. So it's really helpful for, I think, everyone, but I think those of us who are doing the work of trying to support kids, trying to support our young people, to be able to empower them in this way with really important knowledge that, you and I've talked about this, it's the kind of stuff that you just sort of think if we apply good values, we teach good values, it'll all work out. But there's so many more nuances to navigating this world, especially for our kids. So it's just a really wonderful topic for us to dig into today and really kind of get to what does it mean to prepare our kids, to prepare our teenagers specifically to be safe in the world. We know they're going to get some scrapes and bruises. We know they're going to have difficult times, as you shared, and that's to be expected. But we want them to be able to navigate them. We want them to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And they really can't do that without a fair amount of tools in that tool belt. And I think the book is just chock full of those things. So let's dig in, you know, a little bit on this topic here. When we're talking about what they don't teach teens, what are we really talking about here?
You know, you said it, we're talking about life skills and, you know, schools are teaching incredibly important information to help prepare young people to transition out into the, you know, the greater world and have careers and families, et cetera. But there's also a lot of topics that most schools won't teach, you know, your rights with the police, sexual consent, your digital footprint, what acts amount to sexual harassment, what is dating violence, situational awareness, street safety, so many topics that parents and caregivers want to learn themselves, want their children and the children they care for to learn. But we can't teach what we don't know as parents and caregivers. And so the book is really intended as a resource for parents, educators. And when I say parents, I mean anyone who cares for a young person. And it's for tweens, teens, young adults. They can read it or they can just, you know, it's a good discussion starter. So I wrote it really, I have three sons. At this point, they're 20, 19, and 15. But I really wrote it for my three sons because I wanted them, you know, when they get pulled over for the first time, to know what to do and what not to do and so on and so forth. It's a resource. Simple as that.
I like what you said about we can't teach what we don't know. As a teacher, my training covered all kinds of different teaching strategies, design of curriculum, engagement, classroom management, you know, but obviously very heavily into the science of learning and very academic in focus, even special education. But there was nothing, you know, in my preparation that would have prepared me to have conversations like this with kids and with parents who are looking for this. And then, you know, fast forward to becoming a parent, I didn't have that stuff either. I couldn't really tell them other than, you know, be polite when you're pulled over, for example. These are the things that were taught to me, but it's just so much more nuanced today. And with our climate, with the cultural additions, social media, we're going to talk a little bit about those implications as well. Even conversations today, I think, about dating safety, about how all this translates and is influenced by online activities, social media, all of that stuff. We didn't have that to navigate when we were kids, and certainly our parents didn't either. So let's kind of, if you will, take us through those key topics and share with us some of those nuggets.
You know, there's this recurring theme to one extent or another throughout the book, and the book's pretty hefty. I think it's around 300 pages, tons of information. One of the recurring themes is the game changer, and that's the smartphone in their pockets or their purses or their backpacks. And I think about through my teen struggles, and thank goodness I was able to turn my life around and have a family and a career and be most of the time a very productive member of society, right? But I think, like, if I were growing up today with, sure, some of the things I was going through, but just being a teenager and being impulsive oftentimes. And when, you know, you're walking around with a smartphone camera and with a couple clicks of a button or some buttons, you send out something that maybe shouldn't have been sent out, an email, a text, a post. And then the next level of that accountability is the camera. Look, adults make mistakes too. We know that. But, you know, they may already be established in the world. They may be further along when you're starting out and you're trying to make your name and reputation, develop a career or whatever you want to achieve in life. You can easily make a misstep. And we see it all the time. And unfortunately, people can be really judgmental and harsh for teen mistakes that you and I made and many of us made, but they weren't captured digitally. And that's the game changer in a lot of ways.
It really is. I mean, I shudder to think, like, I cringe when I think of many of the choices I made as a young person. And I'm so grateful that we just didn't, that it wasn't recorded, you know?
Yeah.
You watch what happens to celebrities, politicians, you know, anybody who's living, gosh, even just regular Joes like us that might send an emotional text or email or something like that. You'll be canceled in today's climate. To say that this is a judgmental world is really putting it lightly. And it's always been that way for the subset of our teens and our tweens, but ever more so, I think, with this sort of, like you said, evidence that exists through social media, the camera, oh, they're video, you know, videotaping everything. So it's a different landscape.
It's just astonishing. And, you know, there's rules and laws, you know, school policies about images that can be sent around, even if off campus from someone's own device. So, you know, there are many circumstances in which a school after hours can reach into a young person's life and have them face serious consequences for things they've done on their digital devices from their home on their own time. And, you know, schools reach as far as the digital footprint goes, extends beyond the school. And oftentimes it's interesting because, as I said, I have three sons, and when we gave each of them their phones, you know, I get asked all the time at what age. I don't have a perfect answer. Every kid is different. But the one thing we said to each of our sons that we emphasized over and over, and they're really good kids, and I'm not for young adults at this point. We knew they were good guys and we didn't expect them to send nudes or to ask for nudes. But that was the thing I kept saying over and over. We're giving you this phone. You have to be accountable. There's a lot we're going to talk about, but let's talk about the first thing. No nudes. Do not take a nude. Do not send a nude. And just explaining them that it can be very common for people to send nudes, particularly minors. But the consequences for minors can be way more severe than adults. And, you know, you just don't know. You know, sure, the police can come calling because it's considered, you know, child sexual abuse material, child porn, as many people refer to it. And it can really, you know, lead to the police knocking on your door. But going back to the judgments and the harsh criticisms, the far more likely effect of getting that nude out, if it gets to unintended recipients, can be really harsh and judgmental criticism and canceling and all sorts of other things. So there's just a lot to mind. You've got to be always mindful. And again, that's hard for everybody, but can be particularly hard for teenagers if their peers are doing it as well, because there's this pressure. Well, we're doing it. What's the problem?
It's crazy how that just took off so quickly, you know, like there's a camera. And so like within a matter of seconds, that became the thing, you know, and it persists. And there is that sort of bias of like, everybody's doing it. What's the big deal? But it is giving away your power, giving away your power. And of course, it's ultimately going to be distributed. You know, I know that person seems like your very best friend, the love of your life, whoever, whatever. But the reality of relationships at that point in your life is that they're pretty tumultuous. You know, they're not forever relationships, and they are fraught with emotion and betrayal. And you know, I know firsthand of other family members, neighbors, kids very close to our family that have been really negatively impacted by something so seemingly so simple.
When I'm doing my workshops on digital safety, and when I do the workshops on either digital safety or sexual violence and misconduct, I will at some point or another kind of weave my way into like the smartphone camera and nudes and the potential consequences. But I also talk about just your digital footprint overall. And one of those things is something as simple as you're out with some friends and maybe there's some underage drinking and the friend decides to take a picture. And I say, look, I'm not going to judge you. Do your thing. I hope you're not drinking alcohol. But whatever you're doing, make sure if it's not a good look, you don't let anybody take a picture of it. Don't generate evidence against yourself. Don't take a picture of you doing those things, because people can be really, really tough and unforgiving if that gets out. In my book, I was interviewing some college administrators for the digital footprint chapter. And one of them said, when I'm going through college admissions and I'm deciding, you know, who's going to make the next cut, I do a deep dive into some candidates' digital footprints. And he's come across pictures of applicants drinking alcohol in college, or excuse me, in high school, like underage drinking alcohol. Maybe someone sent it to them. There's college admission sabotage. Somehow or other, he came across these pictures. Rightly or wrongly, he said, that's it. They're done to me. There's too much competition. Whereas I interviewed another college administrator for the book, and I asked him, I said, do you ever come across photos of applicants, you know, drinking alcohol, smoking weed? And he said, yeah, of course I do. I do some deep dives into digital footprints. And I said, well, will you exclude an applicant if you see an image of them drinking alcohol? He goes, no. If I wouldn't admit folks into this college who I've come across drinking alcohol, we wouldn't have any people here. He was making a joke, but the point is, one administrator, it's no big deal. It's normal team behavior. And the other one, they're over. It's over. And exactly, you just don't know who the decision makers are and their sensitivities. Everyone's different. So you got to proceed cautiously, particularly if you're doing those things. And so, you know, I always try to remind them, like, you know, and going back to your point, your friend today may not be your friend tomorrow. Starting from sixth grade through, you know, high school, I always ask when I'm on this topic, I say, how many of you, by show of hands, other than a family member, have had a friend break a serious promise to you? Like they promised something and they totally went back on their word. At least half of the hands go up every time without fail. And I'd say, look, if someone has your nude or your party pic and they promise you they weren't going to show it, I'm not saying they're going to break their promises, but you just, by show of hands, established that people you trust will betray you. And if they have your image, it just, they have some power over you. And I like how you phrase that. They have power, some power over you. And I think that resonates with them. Like, yeah, people change. People do things that I didn't think they would do, especially around a breakup.
Yeah. Rules are off. A friend of mine, her daughter had shared nudes with her boyfriend. They had shared them back and forth. Bad breakup. You've heard this song many times before, I know. And of course, then he's blackmailing her. You know, they're underage, the police get involved. I mean, those kids just didn't ever imagine consequences like that. And they could have never imagined. They dated for like 2 years in their minds. That was forever and ever, you know. Of course I can trust this person. But it's just so complicated. And then the other whole wrinkle to it is the distribution, right? So even if you didn't take that, it's not a nude of you that you chose to voluntarily share with someone else. Somehow somebody shares something with you. And what's the implication of that, Jonathan?
Yeah, you have a picture, a nude or partial nude of a minor on your phone, even if it's of you or of somebody else. It doesn't matter who's depicted. If it's on your phone, you can get, or any digital device, there can be serious, serious consequences. And I teach, you know, again, at a lot of different schools and obviously with Safe and Sound and others. And at one of the schools I teach a few years ago, there was a situation with nudes. And there was a student who sent another student a nude from his own device on his own time. The teenage girl who got it, when she opened it up at school, someone did a screen. It was on Snapchat. So it would have theoretically gone away, right? When she opened it, it disappears. If she screen recorded it, they get a notification, right? But someone she was with took a video of this image, and both the student who sent it and the student who took that video got in serious, serious trouble with the school. I think all those decisions were impulsive. You think it's a good idea in the moment, and then you're like, wait a second. But once you hit send, you can't get it back. Mm-mm. And that level of accountability for teenagers, it's messed up. It's sad. It's terrible. Like, that they have to think this through.
And they're brilliant, you know, they're brilliant, but they're not finished. And they don't have that kind of decision-making capability yet. They will. They don't believe it just yet. You know, they very often see themselves as absolutely perfectly capable, more so than the grownups in their lives. But the reality is they just don't have the capacity to see, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 steps forward. And that's where we are. You know, that's where we are in the world. Those are the conversations we need to have. And that's why this is one of my favorite chapters, it's odd to say, but when I think about the conversation you and I are having, I imagine the health class that I took at the time, you know, when I was, a freshman in high school, there was like a semester long class on health. And so they covered the basics of human reproduction and using condoms, those types of very difficult conversations to have with freshmen. But that's one of many very appropriate places that I would love to see schools begin having these conversations with kids, you know, just beginning to plant the seeds ahead. So this, when this situation presents itself, because I promise you it's going to present itself many times during your teen, young adult, maybe even adult life, And when it does present itself, you need to recognize it for what it is. And you need to do these very specific things and not do these very specific things, period. That's just the way that we have to operate here.
Yeah. One of the things about the book, What They Don't Teach Teens, is there's something for everyone. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're talking about these concepts and we just scratched the surface, right? But some parents and caregivers, they may not be concerned about a cyberbullying situation, but they may be concerned about a dating violence situation. And so there's information for them about that. Where others, there may be a nude and they want to focus on that, or they want to know their rights with the police. We're all at different places and our kids are at different places. And I get asked, well, do your three sons know everything in the book? Of course not. But when I'm trying to teach our sons information that they're probably not going to get in school or from other people, or at least not accurate information, I've taught all three of them different things because they're different people. And what one needs, the other's got covered. And so they all need something different. These can be very difficult conversations. You get, like for my three sons, you know, one of them will give me 45 seconds to talk about what I want. Another will give me 3 minutes. And then my third, I'll get maybe 10. I may get 10 minutes. So like, know your audience. What I have found for that one son of mine who I get no more than a minute, 45 seconds to a minute, I can be incredibly concise when I need to be. Okay, these are the three things I want to get across. How do I say them quickly and efficiently before I lose him? And I think some people might be surprised how much you can get across in like 30 seconds to a minute. You can hit your points. And so less is more. In the book, there's like conversation starters and kind of how to convey this information, at least some thoughts. But it can be, you know, they can hear more than, and they understand more than I think we always give them credit for.
That's a great lesson for us all. You know, I think I'm just thinking of like, you know, watching Peanuts and how the adults are like, wah, wah, wah,
wah. Right.
That's how we sound to all of the children and the youth in our lives. So like, if we can focus on the nuggets, that's how they're receiving information. Their brains are primed for that in this day and age.
Yep.
Just short, but impactful little nuggets.
It's interesting because about 5 years or so ago, I was brought in to do a workshop for high school juniors who were new drivers. And, you know, just teaching someone their rights does not mean it will be safe for them to exercise. There's racial injustice and other injustices throughout the criminal justice system. So when I talk about these are your rights and these are how you should invoke them, there are no guarantees. And it can be really, really difficult for teenagers of color, people who you know are struggling with other mental health issues or LGBTQ can be difficult. You know, I didn't think he was listening. And years later, we were talking and he made a statement about how to exercise your rights that I had taught him years before. And I didn't think he was listening. And he's like, well, Dad, this is what you say. I'm like, oh, wow, you listened that day. And he did. So maybe they're hearing more than I give them credit for or many of us give them credit for.
So while we're on the topic of driving safety and knowing your rights, I think it's a good opportunity to talk about, I mean, gosh, a lot of our kids are getting driver's ed in school. Like it's part of, you know, it's an offering in school. But I guarantee you there really wasn't anything in there about how to have that conversation with the police officer when you get pulled over or, you know, how to interact successfully and safely with the police officer. And that is an incredible disservice from a teacher perspective. You know, we're going to give them the keys. We're going to talk about all the wear your seatbelt, the airbag, the, you know, don't drink and drive, all of those things. But you are, as a driver, going to have some kind of interaction with the police.
100%.
And there are a variety of them, and we need to talk about all of them. And you need to understand what their sole focus is when this happens, or when you need to call them for help, because it's always a surprise. You talk to kids, you talk to adults, really, who've had to call 911, and the conversation doesn't go like they think it's going to go, you know, or the interaction when they're pulled over is not at all what they imagined. And that's because they were left to imagine.
Right. And I'm very supportive of the police, and by teaching my sons and other people their rights, because it's all laid out in the book, I think it's better for the police, and I think it's better for the people who are being policed when they know their rights. It can lead to a calmer interaction, and that's good for everybody. It's interesting because when I sent out my draft police chapters to friends of mine that are police officers who are parents, I said, hey, how do you feel about me kind of giving the tricks of the trade and kind of telling people what their rights are? Because I don't want them to escape justice, but I want them to be able to make informed decisions in real time. And they all said the exact same thing. Jonathan, what do you think I taught my own son? What do you think I taught my own daughters? So it's important information, and it's before they you have that conversation with the police officer. It's also, hey, if it's at night and you get pulled over, put on your dome light, put your hands on the wheel. Don't start futzing around in your glove compartment. You wait until the officer approaches, let him or her see your hands, especially at night. And then when they ask you to reach for your insurance, then you do it. But it's just little basic things. And, you know, the most dangerous thing police officers do responding to domestic violence or family violence calls and pulling people over. They don't know what you did or didn't do. So just be respectful. And as parents, we just want you to make it home. Just make it home safely. And, you know, you should be able to have a police interaction and make it home safely. But you also want to do everything you can not to escalate a police interaction.
100%. It's interesting about like that little nugget about the dome light. Sadly, I have been pulled over a few times for speeding. Never knew that. That's one thing that like reading that in the book, I was like, oh, I can see why that would be helpful. The police officer has no idea what they're walking into. A lot of times those simple traffic stops or whatever turn into something much, much more. So every little thing we can do to sort of do our job, whether you're that officer, whether you're that, you know, the motorist, knowing what to do, it can be calming, like you said, you know, just to, okay, I know what I'm supposed to do. These are the steps. These are the things I'm going to do to try to make this as successful as possible.
And I know what they're going to do. I know what their jobs are. I believe police deserve to be treated with respect, but even if you don't, you should still be respectful to the police, right? If you're disrespectful, mm-hmm. should it mean something bad's going to happen to you? Of course not. But these things happen. And in my opinion, the overwhelming percentage of police officers wear the badge with honor. But just like any other profession, you don't know what you're going to get on a certain day. And it's always better to be respectful.
Yeah, without a doubt. There's just so much in there about that sort of street safety. What are some of the other things you find in that topic that those who attend your classes or maybe even your sons or other young people that you've worked with have been like, wow, I didn't think of that?
You know, it's interesting because post-COVID or post the world reopening, the presentation, the workshop I get asked to do all the time now. It is my busiest workshop is, I call it safer get-togethers, but it's really about when you're out and about and you're partying, can you get in trouble for, you know, hosting a drinking party as a parent, right? If there's underage drinking in your house, if you're a minor and you have an alcoholic beverage and the cops come by, what are the potential consequences? Also, when you're at a party, what are ways you can stay situationally aware to help ensure your own safety? You know, like, you know, don't take a drink that you didn't watch being made or opened, safety in numbers, you know, situational awareness. Using your intuition to help keep yourself safe, sexual consent and alcohol. Like, so all this safer get-togethers, I'm having to be able to take all the dates because as COVID reopened and these kids are starting to socialize again and go to parties, some of them are having to figure it out for the first time. And some of them maybe knew some of it and they're just getting back into it. And probably the question I get asked more than anything else is about alcohol and sexual consent. At what point is someone drunk? Like, is it one beer? Is it three shots? Because when someone's drunk, they cannot give you consent. That's it. Let's just start with that. And there's a lot of confusion because there is no one answer, right? For some people, it could be one shot. They're drunk. They can't give consent. For other people, it could be more. I always start with the best possible advice I can give you. The best practice is if there's any alcohol or other drugs. No hookups. Save it for a sober day. And for some of them, they're like, come on, man. Like, meet me where I'm at. For others, like, yeah, I'm not going to. Okay. I have a number of things I tell them. But one of them is also, You can't always tell when someone's drunk. Let's be clear. You can't always tell. But there are times where you can tell if you're paying attention, whether they're slurring their words or acting out of character or stumbling. And I always urge them, okay, like if you think someone may be drunk, take a moment and assess and kind of go through your mind, like, would I give this person my keys? Would I trust them to drive? But most importantly, if it even crosses your mind that they're drunk, like if you even have an inclination of that question, they're too drunk. You don't even have to get into the signs. Like, yeah, there are signs, but if you think they're too drunk, they are too drunk and they can't give consent. You know, I start giving that talk in high school for juniors and seniors, but it's not like it doesn't apply in college. For many people, it applies even more in college.
Without a doubt. This has just been so eye-opening. So, and there's just so much more in the book, so much more to dig into. Where can folks get the book?
Any place books are sold, but most people go to Amazon. And you can find me on my website, whatthedontteachteens.com. And if you have questions or just comments, I always welcome them. I respond to everybody. So just FYI.
Such important information to get out. If there is one thing you want listeners, whether they're kids, parents, teachers, police officers, other prosecutors like you, whoever happens to be listening today, if you want, you know, just one thing for them to take away, here's your opportunity, Jonathan, to sound off.
My big takeaway from writing the book, you know, it's really, really important for anyone who's suffering, but particularly for tweens, teens, young adults, to not suffer in silence. And as a teenager, when I was going through my struggles, I suffered in silence. And I wish I had known, like, just go talk to somebody you trust. Find a trusted adult. If your trusted adult is your parent, that's amazing. But it wasn't for me. And It could have been my best friend's dad. It could have been a coach. It could have been someone, a religious leader. But if you're suffering from anything, it is so important not to suffer in silence. That's what I would urge anyone who's going through a struggle is find someone you trust. And, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, some of the challenges the digital world presents to young people, the many, many challenges. Well, one of the wonderful things about the digital world is there are resources online. Whatever someone may be going through, sextortion, a terrible police interaction, God forbid, a sexual assault, and so on and so forth. There are online resources, many of them 24/7, 365, with people standing by to help. And that's pretty amazing that there are so many caring, wonderful, trained, qualified people who, no matter what you're going through, there's probably a resource out there for you. So don't suffer in silence. Reach out and get the help we all deserve.
Thank you so much for being one of those resources for us. Jonathan, you are an incredible part of our Safe and Sound community. This has been The Sound Off with Jonathan Crystal. We hope you enjoyed this powerful episode of The Sound Off with Jonathan Crystal. Thank you to our season sponsor, the Door Security and Safety Foundation, for supporting this podcast. And thank you for listening and supporting our mission. Remember, school safety is a collective responsibility, and together we can make a difference. Subscribe now to The Sound Off to stay informed and be part of the movement for safe and sound schools. Until next time, stay safe, everybody. Stay safe and sound.